From Raleigh, North Carolina, it's Westworld with Jay, Jack, and Mike, a podcast dedicated to HBO's Westworld. This week, we'll theorize, discuss, and recap the latest episode of Westworld Season 2. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. And welcome to Westworld with Jay, Jack, and Mike. My name is Jay.
My name is Mike.
And I'm naked and afraid.
And welcome to the show. How's it going, guys?
Good.
Thank you for putting that image in the listeners' minds right at the top, Jack. Really appreciate that.
Well, you got that one, didn't you?
Well, yes, obviously. Well,
okay, all right.
I'm assuming that you know, you also wanted to play it into... I guess, are we calling this like a half-confirmed theory that you said that Logan was going to be involved somehow and he was back for this 1 second and he did have an impact on the plot for what it's worth?
Yeah, I guess I could take credit for it. I wasn't going that route, but, you know, if you want to give me a point, I don't care.
All right, okay, what about me? Is this the big anticipation episode?
No.
I get nothing?
No.
Not even, if Jack can get his half-assed point for the Logan thing, I can't even get a speck of anything?
Nope. Because it wasn't proven.
Well, I mean, they were. I said the Ghost Nation is on their own path, separate from Maeve's and Dolores's.
Let's take a quick vote here. I vote no.
Yeah, I'm gonna vote. We'll see. Maybe Jay can prove us over the course of this podcast. But at the outset, I'm gonna have to go with no as well, just because you rigorously said like this will be confirmed, and unfortunately, I don't feel like it was confirmed necessarily.
I watched it twice. I go, nope, still not confirmed. No, Jay still didn't get a point.
That's fine. I'll remember this the next time you guys need my vote.
I get one of your theories. I have a correct theory at the end of this thing. So
okay,
it's okay.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
But I do.
We had an episode that Ethan dubbed Across the Sea Part 2.
Completely disagree now that I look at this. It's not Westworld's version of Across the Sea. It's Westworld's version of Abba Terno, the Richard Alpert episode.
Yeah, Colleen, nice. Colleen was saying a similar thing before. So I was like, maybe it's like the Richard Alpert episode. I was like, yeah, but we liked Richard Alpert before. I don't even know this guy. But I would equate it to a bit of that episode, Abba Terno, and then also the Nikki and Paolo episode, except that we have seen this character a bit. Well, actually, no. Did we only see him this season?
Yes, we've only seen him this season. He was in the flashback in the second episode. He was like the person that Logan was talking to. So I guess they have a bit of a relationship. And he also has like been doing a bunch of various things in Westworld Park proper, but I don't believe we saw the original one in the first season.
So yeah, I think Nikki and Paolo is probably the more appropriate, but a much less controversial, I think, episode than Nikki Paolo episode, even though I really do enjoy that one years later. Maybe I had low expectations or whatever it was, but I really thought it was a fantastic episode. That kind of the end really encapsulated the whole entire story or why we were even getting this story, aside from some cool different plot points that were kind of given answers to. But yeah, I really liked the episode. It was different. It's the second episode this season that was primarily in a completely different language that I thought worked really well, all things considered.
So I think that there's been a lot of consternation that's been going around with Westworld Season 2. I think it's safe to say the three of us are probably higher on the overall product than maybe some of the people out there. But I do feel like something that has been missing from Westworld Season 2 so far are emotional stakes.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, yes, these characters, they've gone on a journey and they're sort of in a different state at this point in Season 2. But Season 1, I feel like they were really letting us know the story of some of these hosts, you know, and like watching their emotions track as they figure out the maze. And I really feel like because I completely agree that I love this episode, I feel like it brought those emotional stakes back. And it's so interesting in that this show focuses so much on the macro that when you take one episode to focus on the micro of like, this is one guy's journey to his own self-actualization and how his own, you know, emotional journey and how that also serves as a microcosm for somewhat of what the hosts are going through in terms of, you know, the emotional stakes that you don't realize go on underneath the surface of these circumstances that Dr. Ford and Arnold have set up. I think it was just really beautifully done. I think, you know, McLaren did a really fantastic job. You know, I don't know if anyone else is playing old Aki Chetta. I don't know if it would be go off as well as Zahn McLennan, who really just ran the emotional gamut. So I thought it did a great job of filling them some blanks while really taking us on an emotional ride, which I quite honestly feel like we haven't gotten in quite some time in Westworld.
No, I would agree. Like this added a lot of context to where I care for the outcomes of the characters. And maybe that's if you could give a fault for season two, it took till episode 8 to really give stakes where I cared, because, you know, I love Maeve, I love her journey, but at the same time, I was like, well, it's not really her daughter. It's all kind of just planted in her mind anyway. I kind of even agreed with Dolores, aka the Deathbringer, last week, that it's just this rope that's tying her down. But in this one, it kind of gave it stakes, like where I want Maeve to live and I want Maeve to get back to her daughter. And now, you know, knowing Akechta. Or Aki.
Just call him Aki. Yeah, that's what, you know, if it's closest, his dearest, you know, call him Aki. I feel like we're okay calling him Aki, considering how much time we spent with him.
But, you know, now knowing what the Ghost Nation's mission is, like, okay, I don't want Dolores and her crew to end their quest to get to the door. To me, I feel like there's so much more emotional stakes in these different characters' journeys. And now I feel like I'm firmly entrenched on the side of Maeve, her daughter, and Ghost Nation and their journey, as opposed to Dolores and whatever her journey is. And I, you know, I'm perfectly fine with that flipping next week or whatever it is. But I feel for the first time this season, there's like real emotional stakes in what we are seeing.
Jack, I know that you watched this one a couple times. Did anything like play differently watching it the second time through, knowing how everything sort of tracks throughout the episode?
My main thing is I'm waiting for the Lee Sizemore and Maeve wedding. I'm looking for that. But no, anytime you have an episode where there's captions and TV show like that, if you notice that you're reading, if it's like, oh, it's a bad episode, but this
reminds me of you, Jack, where there's like reading and like reading. But I get what you're going.
No, but it's like Narcos. Narcos. If you've ever seen Narcos, it's 90% closed caption. It's caption, but you don't even think about it because you're so into the episode, you're so into the story. And that was the same thing with this. Even the second time, I was just so into the story and so okay, watching it and seeing how it played out. It's, you know, just like. It just was a fantastic episode. Not my favorite, but a darn good episode.
Gosh darn it.
Gosh darn it.
People like it.
But it did have emotion. Even Lee Sizemore, you're like going, oh my God. But then he still didn't have the backbone to stand up to, you know, he wants to do the right thing, but he doesn't have the backbone
to do it. He didn't have the backbone to save Maeve's backbone.
No.
It's like, get on out of here, Lee. Get on.
Yeah.
Okay.
To be fair, that tech guy is, I don't know where he came from, but he's very intense. I know he's a little overwhelmed right now, but he's a bit of an intense fellow. I think he needs to go see some occupational therapy once this is all said and done.
I think it's like the slicked back hair. It just makes him more aggressive, I think, possibly.
Plus, he's, you know, Lee Sizemore is afraid of Charlotte, too, so that doesn't help.
Yeah, probably. I just want to give kudos to the Westworld team, writers, directors, everybody, actors, because... Again, I kind of felt the bit of the groan as well with the previews. Like, really? But I thought it played really well. It advanced the story really well while also giving more context to what we have seen before, which, you know, with Nikki and Paula, where they're new characters brought in to kind of give context to maybe some of the stuff in the past or even to people kind of jokingly saying they were there the whole time and how are they there and just kind of inserting them into the past. It didn't feel like that at all. No,
you didn't have as many episodes either, but and there's so many different characters. I just thought it played well. I was worried too. I was like, but I think they start off with Man in Black. He grabs Man of they showed different characters. It just wasn't focused on one storyline.
Yeah, I was surprised at that, because again, maybe this is sort of our lost preparatory mind frames, but I thought, okay, this is going to be from beginning to end Ghost Nation story. But the fact that I was so intrigued, I'm like, why do we keep cutting back to Maeve mm-hmm. on this operating table with this horrifying gash down her neck?
Yeah.
And I thought that we'll talk about the ending, I'm sure, much, much later. But I think, and that's why I'm so intrigued to, you know, talk to you, Jack, about the rewatch. Once you sort of find out, at least for that last part, I don't know when, you know, Maeve sort of takes over from Aki's narrative when talking to her daughter. But I think if you go into that with that mind frame, it all makes sense why he just keeps coming back to her and why Maeve is so listless on the table.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that payoff, I think, is really, I don't know, makes the episode in a lot of ways to those cut scenes, and adding the context of those cut scenes, because in each, the Aki story ties directly into the Man in Black, who has other stuff kind of going on throughout this, Maeve's daughter, and then to a greater extent Maeve, and a bit of Lee stuff in there too, but it's all interconnected in the story they're trying to tell, much like Maeve is interconnected with presumably a lot of hosts in the park. So, excited to recap this one. We also have a lot of listener feedback. And Jack, before we start recording, and even alluded to a couple times as we've been recording already, that he has a doozy of a crackpot theory for us this week. So
I don't. Hold on a second. I don't think I ever said that.
Yeah, you said, "Oh, there's be more facts given out later today."
No, no, I was correct on one. Oh,
okay, all right. Well, we'll see. We'll see.
In fact, you know what? I'm already hitting 300 for the year, so I'm done. I don't want my average to go down.
Two out of the three hosts just elected not to give me a point. That's fine. I don't want any handouts like Jack gets.
No welfare points here for Jay. If a man's got to learn to suffer, Jay, if he wants
true.
To become someone.
If I truly live.
But maybe someday you'll be Lee Sizemore.
Maybe. One day. Before we get into that, I want to thank the people that make the show possible. Our patrons over at patreon.com/JNJack. All of the podcasts on the JNJack Network are listener supported. If you'd like to become a patron, become one today by going to JNJack.com and click on the Become a Patron link. If you maybe we should put a new Patreon level in there where you can also have a vote. Man, I just need to start stuffing the ballot box here.
Wait, so will be each patron gets a vote, or will it be like the patrons get a collective vote?
Yeah, maybe like all the a certain level. If you get to a certain level, each one at that level gets a vote.
I don't think that's going to help you though.
Yeah, probably not.
I think most patrons don't like you.
Yeah, you're stuck in the ballots and you're against you.
Oh man! All right,
you need to find a group of people that like you.
That's true. That's true.
There's got to be something out there.
You have to pay the people to become higher tier patrons. You're essentially bribing them to get to a place where they can vote for you.
I mean,
I'm not opposed to that.
I hate to keep bringing up Fartgate, but every time there's a fart sound, they blame you.
It's true, but you know, that's fine. They can blame me. So you know, there's another one last week. I don't know. I honestly don't know how it got in there. It doesn't make sense.
Ghost Fart Nation.
Ghost Fart Nation. I believe there is a murder mystery or crime a mystery podcast in the works for the JNJack Network on #Fartgate, and they just got more content for their, I think they're on a 6-episode arc from what I understand, so more to come there. All right, let's get into this recap, starting with a kind of a crawling Man in Black. So right away, thinking that maybe we're going to just spin with the Ghost Nation, not quite the case, and Man in Black is not dead yet. And we're also kind of not introduced, but Aki comes into the scene and, you know, takes him alive, doesn't kill him, to which Man in Black's like, you know, if you wanted to let me die, why don't you let me die there? To which he replies, death is a passage from this brutal world, and you don't deserve that. So Man in Black is alive. More to come there, especially what we saw with the preview for next week.
And he's not well-liked.
No.
I mean, he dragged himself far, right? Yeah. I don't know how far that river is from that little farm establishment that he got shot up at, but I don't know. I assumed he had, again, as we talked about last week, he had some plot armor that I felt like he was going to make his way through there, especially considering what we see next week. Maybe it'll be worth it to have him still riddled with bullets, but able to survive it. But, you know, Aki says, as he mentioned, you don't deserve the exit, which I feel like lies completely counter to all this door talk and the game talk that he's been receiving the entire time. So this is the first, like, dissenting opinion that Bill has gotten from someone in Westworld proper about how, you know, this game is not his.
Why was he going in that direction? We thought he would go into, like, one of the buildings and get one of those magic save your life kits.
Well, maybe it wasn't right here, or there wasn't any around there, and he just needed some water.
Well, he was right there. I mean,
maybe there was no kits there.
All right, maybe he's just thirsty.
Yeah, they all got taken. And maybe he wanted to wash his wounds or something like that. Though I feel like if he filled himself with water, they just all come out of the holes in his body.
Yeah. Well, I must say, like, these wounds must be different because he was shot several times in the gut and mid sections of his body. Wouldn't he have bled out eventually? Or
you would think that. Yeah, you would think that. But I don't know. I don't know with Westworld here.
Any Western I've ever watched, a gut wound is the slowest way to die.
It is, but you would bleed out eventually. It seems like crawling from wherever he was to that river, then being just, you know, kind of chucked to the ground in a kind of Ghost Nation headquarters. Yeah, I feel like he would eventually bleed out, but, you know, maybe the laws of physics are slightly different in Westworld.
Ooh, so maybe they aren't on an island. Maybe they are in space, as was previously theorized. The gravity's different, which is why the blood's able to stay in his body.
They're in another world.
Because, I mean, you can say Maeve, too, is living on extensively, but she's you know, a quote-unquote android robot, whatever. So, you know, the normal rules of having a physical body don't quite apply to her, I would think. But still, yeah, it's to your point, Mike, a bit of plot armor that he's still here, but excited to see how that one plays out.
But we don't want him to die, do we?
No, I don't. You know, I kind of feel bad that he's the villain, and I get it, but I really like his character. But, you know, I get how he's the bad guy.
Any chance this guy can turn around and be the good guy at the end?
Maybe this is a bit of a hot take for me. I don't think he's the bad guy anymore. I think Dolores is markedly the bad guy, combined with some Charlotte for good measure.
Yep, I agree. I feel like he's on his redemption path. Not just straight up bad guy like he was, Black Hat like he was.
I think look back to another fantastic episode, Riddle of the Sphinx, where he ends up, you know, gunning down this entire town of Confederados because he gets sort of triggered by watching Lawrence's wife get taken away. Mm-hmm. And yes, as Lawrence talks about last week, he did once upon a time be a little crueler to them, but it does seem like he has a bit of heart there. And maybe I'm also just sort of loading myself up for what we're about to get next week, I'm assuming. But I do think the show is trying to steer us away from this, you know, Bill's a Black Hat, and steer us more towards, like, hey, he's a guy who's been complicated and corrupted by the idea of this park, but there is still a human underneath it all.
Maybe we need to add a gray hat to the Jay and Jack or Jay, Jack and Mike logo for Westworld.
About time there's three of us.
I don't think he's a bad guy. Let's see.
He's not a good guy either.
He's a gray hat. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. The world's not black and white, Jack.
No, Logan is not a good guy.
Oh, my God. Really? See, can we both vote to take away points from him if we keep shilling that crap? Maeve is still alive, and Lee has a change of heart, seemingly. She's special. You got to save her. I was wrong.
You got to be with your daughter. So going to Mike, we've talked about Lee a couple times. He was your least favorite character last season. Yeah. Has it turned? Do you like him? Mike has been
turning through the season. It's the hashtag Lee Dempsey.
But are you on the side that he's here to stay, or do you still want him killed off?
No, I mean, Lee has leapfrogged, if you will, above several other characters. I feel like, again, I'll just say once again that I feel like my issue with Lee in the first season was that there was no dimensionality to him.
Yeah.
He was just like, here is this brash writer, alcoholic asshole type. And what I really enjoy about the season is that they're bringing emotional depth to him. we'll talk a bit about his scene. I mean, he has this one scene with May, but particularly when he is teary-eyed talking to her about how she, like, basically when he thinks she's on her deathbed, talking about how she needs to find her daughter. I don't know. That's really interesting to me. I want to, like...
Does he have deeper feelings for her? Because I kind of joked about a wedding, but does he have deeper feelings for her than we...
I don't know if it's romantic feelings. Yeah, I feel like it's a connection, but, like, I wish I had known more about Lee, because maybe there's something involving, like, him and a kid. The only thing we know about him is that story about how he basically, like, created Hector because he had gotten broken up with, and he decided to essentially create someone that this woman wanted him to be. So now I'm almost inherently fascinated by Lee as someone who almost creates some of these characters in his own image, or vice, or, you know, quite the opposite. I would love to see, you know, what inspired those comments. Was it just being comrades in arms for such a long point in time, or was there something from his past and his psyche that informs his deep connection to her, connection to her child? I might be looking too far into this, but
so Lee Sizemore flashback.
I mean, maybe we could just do some exposition,
a whole episode dedicated to Lee.
Yeah, we don't need to keep. You know, you don't need to portion out flashbacks. We got a Ghost Nation. We're gonna get a Man in Black next week. Like, I'm okay with just. You know, I feel like the Lost comparisons warrant themselves, but I feel like once we start adamantly getting into flashbacks, I feel like that's when the thread between them is very, very thin.
But it's, yeah. as long as they work, I have no problem. As long as it tells a story and the story progresses, I don't have a problem with a flashback.
The problem with that, Jack, is I don't trust your judgment there, because you are, like, addicted to flashbacks. So I feel like you're not impartial.
But you can go back and listen to the Lost podcast. I was like, okay, we don't need any more of these flashbacks. I got I don't need any more to determine Locke is an idiot.
I also think that one of the gripes with the second season is, especially when we're in the Bernard episodes and we were jumping all over the place, I don't think necessarily adding flashbacks will help straighten things out. If anything, I think they, especially considering that they don't have the noises to cue in and out the flashbacks, the big timpani drums like they have on the show proper. I think it would just lead people even further down the confusion rabbit hole, which, who knows, maybe knowing Jonah Nolan and Lisa Joy actually might be their intention.
Well, they have they're doing 5 seasons, right?
They're confirmed through 3, at least. They've written for 5.
So 32 episodes.
50.
Well, 32 total, more left. 32 left.
Oh, 32 more. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So, just saying. A few more flashbacks wouldn't hurt.
You know what, you guys do some flashbacks.
Well, no, I'm just saying, like Mike is saying.
He falls in love with her, and
I'd like to know a little more about Lee. If he's going to be around, I want to, all of a sudden,
I think he has turned.
He's not the same guy that he was last season.
But I don't think he's needed any flashbacks to do that. Like, he's given a little bit of his backstory. He's been able to show more emotion. So yeah, I don't think
Jay, this is why nobody's going to vote for you. Get a point.
What? Because you think the hill for him to die on is that he doesn't care if Lee Sizemore doesn't have a flashback episode?
People love Lee.
Next, we're going to hear, like, you know who needs another flashback episode? Logan. We really need to see her, well, like, all. Yeah,
we really need strung out Logan, you know, in the projects of, you know, whatever futuristic city they're in.
Well, they're probably in Phuket, and he gets a tattoo.
Oh no.
We then go to kind of the bulk of this episode. Aki tells his story to Maeve's daughter. He lived happily until the death of Arnold. He had a wife, and that's where he kind of gets the kind of beautiful line, "Take my heart when you go," that kind of runs throughout of it, and Maeve kind of closes with that. So he kind of hears the aftermath of Dolores killing Arnold, and in that he saw Arnold's maze, and he became obsessed with it. Carving it into flesh, earth, and stone. And this we kind of find out even more later on, but what are the thoughts here on just about every appearance of the maze outside of Dolores' kind of flashes was all Aki? What are our thoughts there as that reveal?
Yeah, that we thought that it was like someone, you know, painting something or hinting to Dolores about something, when I think Ford says later on that it's what, like a beleaguered symbol that shouldn't exist in the first place. And it just so happened that Aki became obsessed with it because he found the toy. I don't know if you guys noticed. Did you notice a certain thing was also in the room with Aki when he discovered the maze?
The drink?
No, it's a living creature, arguably.
Oh, the fly?
Yes, the fly was buzzing around. And the fly, I feel like...
I didn't see that.
Yeah, the fly, I think it was on his hand.
Yeah, it flew onto his hand.
Because I think that the fly throughout Westworld Season 1 sort of symbolized, you know, these robots sort of coming into their own, at least the big moment in the first episode where they say, oh yeah, Dolores would never hurt a fly, and then the very final shot of Episode 1 is her killing this fly. So I feel like it's yet another sort of motif of, okay, this is where he doesn't realize it, but he's about to unlock a giant door to this vast wonderland of creativity and philosophical thought, and the fly is going to be there with him.
So is the fly the kind of the thing that touches them and then kind of sends them off on their path, or just a nice little visual symbol there, or connective tissue?
Yeah, I mean, I want to put it past Ford to put something in a fly, to make the fly imbue something. Maybe he exposed the host to a bunch of flies before Arnold died. I'm not entirely sure. But yeah, I would just say it's more of a recurring motif, much like a bunch of other thematic things that I'm sure we're going to be bringing up in this episode.
Yeah. He is changed. After that, he is changed to, before the grand opening, he changed to the Ghost Nation leader. And a short staff Westworld left his previous data in there. So I thought that was, I didn't notice it the first time watching it. Second time watching it, I kind of picked up on that, and it kind of makes sense on the reason why he was able to remember these things and why it was also there is because the short staff Westworld didn't have time to really completely rewrite, you know, his memories and everything like that. So I thought that was an interesting little tidbit that was in there. Did you guys pick that up?
Yeah, did you guys like seeing, I wouldn't say old school staff, but I guess like more the Generation 1 staff?
Yeah, yep. I thought it was fun. I always like, even last season, when we go back to the earlier stage, or even when they're like in the bunker, the basements, and it was the old logos and stuff like that, I find it interesting going to the past. Like, you know what we need a flashback for is the park needs a flashback episode to the old park days.
I'm against all flashbacks now. You guys talked me out of it.
Wow, we really convinced him, Jay.
Yeah, I'm done.
He says present and forward, please, from now on.
I want to see a date. What the date is.
We need a timestamp running at the corner, like we're watching an old school like video handheld camera recording from the 90s.
Oh my God.
That's what I want.
He has felt the presence of the newcomers since the beginning, the people he can't kill, and he happens upon a sun-mad Logan who imparts the idea of this is an illusion, there has to be a way out, where is the door, this is the wrong world. So it's just Logan just trying to get out of Westworld or is lost or whatever, but in this he kind of, you know, unleashes a little kernel in his mind that connects to the maze. For Aki, that there is a door that in this world, there's many worlds, and this world is the wrong one, and he needs to get to the right one. Jack, you like to make a much ado about nothing with Logan here.
Going back to Man in Black being good or bad, remember, it was William that sent poor Logan naked on a horse with no name into the desert. Did he deserve it?
I mean,
his horse dies. He's just laying there naked. Luckily, I don't think he deserved it.
Well, I think it probably for him felt good to get out of the rain.
Yeah, I think that, you know, luckily Aki came by to, I guess, give him a blanket and wait for. I'm surprised it took him that long to get picked up. Because wouldn't you think that, like, especially the son of the Talos founder would be like, oh, let's keep tabs of him. Oh, is he just hanging out on the edge of the park? Okay, we need to pick him up ASAP. Or maybe Logan had to send up like a distress signal, like a flare or something. But it was weird to see him so sun mad. But it was weird because he was almost acting like our much bereaved Peter Abernathy, of like him stuttering and sort of like rambling mindlessly, but still containing these pieces of information that are primarily affecting hosts. I'm not saying that Logan is a host, but it's just an interesting comparison that in both of these cases, you have someone who is not mentally completely there, but they're still saying things that are impactful to those who are encountering them.
Exactly. And that's where I think this confirms my theories that did not get any votes, in that he, Aki here said he senses the presence of the newcomers, the people that he can't kill. And what does he do when he finds that person that's kind of strayed away? He gives them a blanket, and then I think kind of sends the signal back to headquarters that we have a stray newcomer that needs to be saved.
What?
So I think...
There's something in the... There's a magic blanket now?
He said it. He said it right there. He said that he sensed that when there's people that he can't kill and the newcomers, and then he gave that person a blanket and said his kind would come to get him soon. Did not hurt him at all. Did not even pretend to hurt him. Was there as kind of the safety rail that I said that the Ghost Nation had this kind of sub-program in. So there you go. Anything? No.
Okay, I'm gonna vote. I'm gonna vote again. No.
I'm starting to. We're on the dial here. I'm starting to move over towards the yes, but I'm getting a little more convincing.
At this point, why would you waste your time killing Logan?
Because
he can't kill Logan. No, he said can't. That.
I know, but at that point, he's basically dead anyway.
No, he said he gave him a blanket and said that someone will be there to save him soon. So. Like I said, the Ghost Nation was there as a kind of safety protocol for the guests, that if something goes haywire or whatever, that they kind of bring them
Logan's
to safety.
But Logan's not a guest.
Or have them be safe. He is. He is. He's a quote-unquote newcomer.
He's part just owner. A VIP.
Yeah.
It's still a guest.
All right. I'm leaning towards almost giving you a point. Almost.
All right. Okay.
You know what? Mike can decide. If Mike says yes, I will go ahead and say yes.
Oh, wow. All right. So I just got to work on that here.
You know what? I'm all for us
being... It's like an episode of... It's like the final of Survivor.
Yes, exactly. We have a tie vote right now. You know what? I'm all for, much like Dolores is trying to bring forth messages of, you know, equity for all hosts and humans alike by blowing up the cradle. Everyone gets a point. I'll say Jay... I'll give you some credit here. You got the point.
Yay!
All right. So there you go, Jay. Don't say we never gave you anything.
Though, to be fair, I'm pretty sure Jay was just talking through us using his, mind-bending abilities without us even realizing it.
Using the podcaster's mesh network.
Yes, exactly. I mean, we are on a network, so it could be a mesh network for all we know.
But, you know, after we gave you that point, we just lost all our patrons.
Oh, darn. Shucks.
Fair trade. We'll have a flashback to when we used to have Patriots. All right, so now I'll go back to the question that we asked in the second episode. Is this a wrap on Logan?
No. We will see him again. No, we'll see him again.
Because now I'm wondering, again, I guess we're fleshing out the timeline between like when he got sent off on the horse and when he became a strung out, you know, druggie who was... bemoaning the concept of Westworld and then eventually died. I don't know. Do you think there's any sort of narrative things that can be filled in there? To your point about, you know, are there other flashbacks that are necessary to have Logan in there?
I think the only way that we can definitively say that Logan won't come back is when we say he's definitely going to come back, because it's like every time it's like, all right, he's done. But then he comes back for some reason. So,
Why the dislike for Logan? I don't get it.
I don't think it was dislike. I just think, you know.
It's just like we're on to other things. You know? I feel like Logan sort of like served his purpose. He was the one to sort of help Bill become Bill. William, I guess, become Bill. And it's sort of like, do we need this? I think Ben Barnes does a great job. And it's interesting to sort of see him in a different state as a really crumbled man. Or I guess dried out man this episode. But
piece of jerky.
Yeah, big old piece of jerky. He went from jerk to jerky. But I wonder, you know, if it's necessary to see him anymore, you know?
I guess we'll have to wait and see what happens.
I thought we were good not seeing him anymore after we kind of saw him strung out and then he got kind of referenced that he died of an overdose. I was fine then. But, you know, I think it's kind of fun here as well. To Mike's point, Ben Barnes is a fun actor and great guy, and I assume he's right. I don't know him, but you know,
like,
so it's
wow,
cool to see him.
What are you, a stalker now?
And to be fair, he is one of the crux points of this episode. Does he not put the idea in Aki's head of, you know, both the door and, like you said, Jay, the thought exactly, this is the wrong world, that's what gives Aki this idea of, okay, I need to eventually, and we'll talk about later what that plan might entail, but for him to say, okay, my plan is to escape into this other world because it's not right for me. So yep. Had Logan not been there, who knows what he would be doing?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. He is the Abernathy of season two, right? I think, for Aki here. As you said, Mike. So then he goes back to his old village. He is triggered by the sight of his wife and made him realize that he lived a past life. He felt this world wasn't his true home, but his wife was. He went to find Logan, but he was gone. Instead, he stumbled upon a construction of the valley beyond, a passage to another world. This is the wrong world. So we go to the construction of the door. I've watching it several times. Was there anything kind of jumped out at any of you guys for what we saw or what we saw through Aki's eyes? Anything that kind of was a big reveal?
Well, I mean, first off, he saw that stuff, which yep. Let's remember that the hosts in season one, it's the whole doesn't look like anything to me. They yep. Were programmed specifically not to see any anachronistic technology. True. But I feel like this is, I can correct me if I'm wrong here. Is this like the first actual confirmation from the show proper that the Valley Beyond and the door are in the same place?
I think so. Well, we've seen William took Dolores to kind of see it being built. What was it, the end of episode two, I think?
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have seen it before, but not quite this in-depth, I think.
I mean, and it looks like, if we're talking about, like, the door might mean another set of backups or something, it does look very industrial.
Yes.
It's less of a giant door and more of like, here's a building connected to another building. So I feel like that also increases the chances of what will exactly be in this facility that Dolores is so adamant about also getting to.
Yeah, because there was just a lot of stuff there. There was all these kind of, it was almost like little containers stacked on containers, stacked on containers, stacked on containers, making all these little like kind of towers and this kind of horseshoe shaped thing that looked very electronic and everything like that. And, if it is somehow all of these real humans backups or something along those lines, or if that's their way out of this world, I think, Jack, this might be one of the few things here that could maybe back up your that it's all virtual reality as opposed to.
I'm going to say it probably is.
Because it looks very technological as opposed to just a door that takes you off this quote unquote place. I still don't think it is, but I think you could argue that this thing is the simulation, however you get out of the simulation. But,
that was kind of what I was getting when Logan was talking. That was what I was thinking. But the only thing I noticed with that key, and it's probably something doesn't mean anything, when he was on his horse, every time he was going towards the, it changed to piano music.
Hmm.
Every time he did that, he was like on his horse going somewhere, it changed to like piano music, like the player piano.
But I will say,
I just noticed that there was piano music when he was on his.
Yeah, well, if that's true, though, let's remember that the piano has sort of grown to represent, like, Ford's growing influence over the state of things, to the point of where we saw him playing the piano in the Mariposa before. So maybe, and we can talk later about, again, this sort of brings up this conversation of, are these characters really quote-unquote free, or are they following this path that Ford has sort of set them onto? So maybe that's sort of an argument for the latter, that Ford is still leading him to find the door, that even though, again, he feels like the maze is an old-fashioned concept that really shouldn't have worked, he's inspired by Aki to say, yeah, you know what, I have a good idea for what's going to happen next.
Well, yeah, I think, and Jack's also like, shoot down your VR theory, if that was the case, because Ford was able to function in his virtual cradle, but Jim Delos was unable to when he was, quote-unquote, out in the real world, so I think that nixes it, but I think
we'll see. Is Carlsbad really in the real world? I don't know. I've been there. I'm going to say no.
Oh, man. So he takes his wife out of his village so that they may escape, kidnap style. He takes off his makeup and makes Kohana remember him by telling her, take my heart when you go, take mine in its place. When they get to where the door was, it is gone. Beautiful country, though.
Yeah.
I wonder if maybe there was something like where because he took her and she was not fully awakened yet, like they couldn't see it. Like you both need to believe in it if you want to see the door or something like that. Or they just do a remarkably quick construction job.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think it. It could go either way, but I think the one that makes the most sense is that, you know, movers and stuff like that, they're able to kind of cover it up pretty quickly.
Or is it just an illusion that Ford wants him to see?
That could be true as well, that the door itself, so maybe just even undoing your virtual reality theory, the door itself is virtual reality, and it's it's more of a mirage. It's just a place for everyone to meet up, and then whatever he wants to happen is going to happen.
Exactly.
Illusion, Michael. Let's see. They found, or the techs find Koana, and took her back to behavior. And when he went back to the village, she was replaced by someone else, which is kind of tragic, for his character.
Couldn't have got on the horse and
beat like a dune buggy? Unlikely.
It took him a while to realize that, oh, maybe I should sort of put myself under, much like Maeve said, and infiltrate it from the inside. So you'd think that he probably just didn't want to expose himself. Because let's also remember that, like, I think he was also able to gain a lot of sentience because he hadn't died in, like, nearly a decade. So he never had his memory wiped or anything like that. Right. So I think he wanted to keep that streak alive, much like Jack's prediction streak.
Yeah, I think it's partly that. And I think, you know, like he did the next night or whatever, he assumed they would just put her back in the village and then go back and get her. But that didn't end up being the case.
Now the techs were also wearing the hazmat suit again.
Yeah,
have we got an answer why they have to wear the?
Probably not allowed their DNA to corrupt the hosts.
Right. You can imagine that, especially since the hosts are like, if these are first generation hosts, that they're more like newborns. You don't want to I don't know. You want their immunity systems to build. I thought it was also interesting that Aki called new Kohana a ghost, considering that, again, it's going to be Ghost Nation. This idea of, like, these replacements coming in. It almost lies counter to the idea of Ghost Nation, which is, like, you can never forget who you are. It's just an interesting concept.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, too, especially if they're, like, collecting DNA from their visitors, they have to wear those suits so that their DNA doesn't also, like, show up and kind of mess up their collection process, probably.
All right, I'll go with that.
Another thought there. He went on a quest to find her, which brought him to Maeve's daughter. You know, when he, at his darkest moment, you know, she gave him the strength to keep going. That's why he kind of kept watching her and looking over her.
What is this with the show and, like, the kids always being, like, the best people? Between little Ford, Lawrence's daughter knows everything. Maeve's daughter is super caring. You even have, like, if you count Emily, even though she's an adult child, it feels like she is very knowledgeable about everything as well. So, I don't know. It feels like the youngest generation should be the ones that should inherit Westworld at the end of the day.
Well, they're innocent, right? They're not corrupted yet.
That's true. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a good analysis there. But I think it's just, it kind of adds, I don't want to say creepiness, but there is just like that level of, or, you know what I mean? Like when Lawrence's daughter kind of shifts into Ford mode or just trying to tell him, it's like it kind of has a more kind of creepy impact than if it was like a grown up doing it, I think. So it might be like a visual.
Yeah, well, I guess because you also have to sort of imagine, like, with Emily in particular, her sort of being raised inside the park, and so she is almost conditioned like a host sometimes to, like, oh, I know Lakota, I can respond, you know, I can talk to my father like Ford, as an example. So it's interesting to see how someone like William, who he feels like, you know, he was born here and he feels like he grew into the person he was here, but Emily quite literally probably grew up in this park to the point where she saw her much beloved elephants all the time. So just watch her behavior in particular. Now, I guess I don't know if that lies in the similar vein as the actual kid hosts who literally have been here their entire lives, but they have like a wisdom beyond their years. Probably because, to your point, Jack, they haven't been corrupted with some of the vices that, you know, the other adults are preoccupied with.
Does this help answer your question you had last week? Why Maeve's daughter didn't stay in the barn?
Yep.
because she wasn't afraid of Ghost Nation because she was friends.
Yeah, that could be. That's actually a very good point. That it's,
so that's probably why she came out, because she was thinking they won't harm me.
Or if she didn't know, because it was like a past memory, she probably there's like an instinctual level there that it's probably safer with them than with those other people.
And to be all fair, right. they didn't harm her. And they didn't even shoot up her mother either, or her adoptive mother. So they just took her to like a nice little camp, gave her a juice box and some kind words, and then sort of sent her along.
Little Happy Meal, and said, "Hey, here you go."
When his travels brought him back to his old home, he noticed more and more his original people had vanished. And Wachapi, who is one of the originals there, notices that her son has been replaced. And she told of the myth of people going below. And I think he then kind of gets the idea of the way that he could get to his beloved Kohana is to die. So he chooses to let one of the guests kill him. And then when he is inside, I found out that he's still on Alpha 2 and hasn't been updated in 9 years. The boss tells him to update and send him back in. The boss seemingly, I guess, just like, man, he made it 9 years without dying. Yeah, he can stay out there.
I like how they say, we're going to leave him alone for 4 hours? I'm not going to babysit him.
Yeah, let's go have lunch. And these people love their lunch. Like, I think it was Sylvester talking about like how he was going to dig into a ham sandwich and some nice like VR porn back in season one. Though I guess if you're listless, spending all that time underground can make someone go crazy. This was an interesting scene just because not only does that get called to Maeve's storyline, which she does something very similar and, you know, letting herself get killed or feign getting killed to infiltrate the Mesa, it just sort of harkens to their connection, which we'll find out later on. But it goes back to, I feel like it was Ford as the young boy who told William in the beginning of season two, like, you know, the path is not forward, it's backward, essentially. And that's sort of what we find out here with Aki, that he is sort of in his traditional garb. And he says, okay, if I want to find Kohana and go underground, I need to go back into Ghost Nation garb. So it's interesting to see how for him to advance forward as well, he had to reach back into his past and pull out this thing that, you know, he calls himself dehumanized when he gets programmed to be a member of Ghost Nation. So he probably didn't love it, but it has a purpose to move forward.
Exactly. They leave him for lunch. He goes down to the old storage level and finds his Kohana on ice, as well as Wachapi's son. Really moving scene, like really sad that, you know, she's right there, but she's gone.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty heartbreaking. Again, I think this is like firsthand what we think about when it comes to these emotional stakes, that this guy has been, and we get a little, again, connecting with Maeve, we got like a split second of this with Maeve when she finds out that she was a ghost, that she had gotten replaced with someone when she finally finds her daughter. But when, you know, he finds Kohana and he sweet talks her and tries to get her to come up and just finds that she's unresponsive, like, you can tell he knows in that second that, like, despite his fruitless searching and obsessions, he's lost, you know, his reason for living. And just the heartbreak on his face and him just like weeping in her arms. And but then it leads to this beautiful like epiphany about how, you know, we were all bound together, the living and the damned, and how he realizes like he saw beyond himself and he realizes that essentially this is happening to everyone. Everyone's sort of sharing this loss because this is something that they're all going through. All of their mothers and fathers and sons and daughters and wives and husbands and friends and horses, I don't know, there's a chance of losing them forever despite making these close personal connections. So again, to have him make such a heartbreaking epiphany, I feel like is so different from the way these other characters have done it.
Yep. Yeah. I agree. I absolutely agree. Jack, what were your thoughts?
No, it was very moving. Like you said, you sit there and go, come on, wake up. But you know, just wasn't meant to be. But
I wonder once they like unleashed all of the kind of cold storage people, I wonder if there is a reunion for them in the future.
Well, couldn't Maeve do it?
Maybe, since she's like in admin mode.
I don't know. I mean, this was, we don't know how often do you think they like do a dump of cold storage? Because I mean, it's been a while at this point, I'm assuming.
Well, like another 20 years from that point?
Yeah. So I don't know how much of a backlog they have of these decommissioned hosts, but if so, there's a chance that Kohana is out there, though again, considering all the carnage that's ensued, I don't know if it's necessarily her.
Right, that's
might
true.
Be like someone else's consciousness in her, maybe even a human's consciousness in her, which would make things interesting.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like to have her still, her body still around somewhere, and presumably her mind could be kind of jump started. It would be interesting to, or if there is a chance to bring her back, you know, why not? But yeah, we'll have to wait and see if that happens. And also, we had the piano version of Heart-Shaped Box, which was used in one of the trailers. Still, I think, really poignant or a good choice to kind of go with this scene. He goes back to Wachapi, tells her what's going on. He says he found her son, gives her like a lock of his hair, and says they can find the door to leave. And then he dedicated his life to sharing the maze symbol. You've seen it before. They took it from you. And he is the one who put the maze in their scalps, which kind of leads me to question, okay, when they would pick up the scalp from the, you know, the dead person, wouldn't they be like, hey, what's that there? Or they just, again, I think, you know, maybe they're short staff, or they just don't care because it's their, you know, 9-to-5 job. It's nothing more than that. They just, you know, put the scalp back on with the maze inside tattoo intact.
They're thinking about lunch all the time. It's like, all right, let's see. We got the Panda Express. We got this little like dining hall. Well, I wonder how
maybe they don't know that that's not supposed to be in there.
Well, I was also going to ask, how often do these hosts get scalped? You know, like maybe that's cut them open to put the brain ball in, but I don't know if they're futzing around with that many brain balls. I think that it's, you know, it's odd that William. Now I want to think about, like, how did William know to scalp that guy from the very first episode to find the maze underneath? Because it seemed like it was more pick and choose with specific members or ex-members of Ghost Nation that Aki had an affiliation with. It is a little odd that William knows a lot about the park, but I don't know if he knew that much to be like, oh, there's this rogue organization that has painted a symbol in various people's scalps that will talk about this larger idea of a maze.
Well, maybe we'll find out next week. Well, he has traveled. He's been there for, what, 30 years traveling the park. I mean, he knows pretty much all the ins and outs, right?
Well, I think there's an element to William spent a lot of time with Dolores, in which we're probably the kernel of the idea that the maze was put into his mind, or thinking that was a part of some of Arnold's game. So he was interested in it. If he happened upon the homestead with Maeve and her daughter, where... Aki was kind of putting that symbol in the ground. Maybe he saw it again. So maybe he just kind of saw it a few times, like, this is something important. And that's when he started really searching it. And maybe by happenstance, you know, he scalped somebody for some reason, or, you know, somebody else scalped somebody and then he saw it again. So it's just maybe just kind of similar to Aki, where kind of just stumbled upon this maze symbol. And it kind of led him down a rabbit hole that, you know, led to him scalping people and all these other different things to try and find this symbol and try and find the answer of what it was.
I like the symbolism of the scalp as well. Obviously, there are larger historical connotations to that, well, with like the horrible treatment of Native Americans. But this idea that like something is lying literally at the top of your mind and you don't really realize it. And also him talking about how the symbol essentially means that you can see. I guess it's this idea of like, as they talked about last week, like sight in the dark, that you think you can't see, but there's something that exists within your permavision that you eventually get used to. It's interesting. I know they sort of resorted it to a montage, but to see Aki sort of, again, assume that Ghost Nation was created as an entire group and assigned out, but it seemed like it's Aki essentially sort of building it from the ground up, going to these other Lakota and saying, okay, I'm going to, you know, indoctrinate these people into the idea of the maze and into finding this idea and eventually creating this door that we can get away and never come back. And he's just sort of recruiting people, it seems, which I thought was a really interesting, again, very comparable to like what Dolores is doing a bit.
Yep, exactly. And it's in well, this Dolores, episode, it seems very much like he is doing it for the good and she is doing it for the bad. Kind of again,
Dolores is recruiting and killing at the same time. Yeah. So it's like,
well, again, it seems like they're on a collision course together. And I'm on Aki's side here. I'm on his side of the story. I want him to win.
Which is interesting because we've never seen the two of them interact this season when, you know, Aki's been here. So we thought it was going to be Dolores versus Maeve, but with Maeve assumingly out of, you know, in a bad condition for the near future, it could be Aki by proxy.
Aki by proxy. I like that.
Aki by proxy. And I guess now it makes sense why in the first episode they're patrolling the beach and they see a Ghost Nation member get shot down by Dolores. I totally agree. I think in the immediate future, we're going to see Dolores and her people gun down at least some of the Ghost Nation because she realizes that they're the ones that are trying to explore the Valley Beyond for a different reason.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. He was misunderstood by Maeve as having ill intent. That's the Mason in the dirt in front of her home. And she talked about over the years, our numbers grew, more waking up. And then he met Ford, who was discovering the mazes put on their scalps. So he's kind of looking at it there. He says that Ford says the maze was supposed to be forgotten. Aki says he gave himself his own drive to spread the truth that there is more than just this world. And he shares that he believes there is a door and the maze will help people find it. And Ford says, when the death bringer comes for me, you will take your people and lead them to a new world. And he tells Aki to keep watching. He then arrives at the Ford death aftermath. And he says, it's time to find the door before the death bringer kills us all. From his beginning to where we're kind of catching up with the modern time, we kind of have his main drive to get to the door before Dolores kills them all. And like I said before a couple times already, like, I'm on his side. I want him to make it.
Well, it's interesting that you say that's sort of his drive because he says, you know, initially his primary drive was to, what, honor his tribe.
Yeah.
And now he says he changes it to spread the truth, but I feel like he's still sort of doing it by honoring his tribe. But I noticed something that was talked about online that I wanted to bring up in a video where, you know, Ford, in his final speech before he gets killed at the end of season one, talks about how he met someone, you know, he said that, like, everyone's sort of on their own path until he met someone who changed their path. And maybe that inspired Ford to sort of pursue something. There's a lot of speculation to it. Now that we watch this scene, is there a chance that that could be Aki? That he told Ford, hey, this is my new drive. And maybe Ford, who came in saying, oh, yeah, the maze is a misbegotten symbol, we're not focusing on that anymore, maybe this gives him the idea. I mean, who knows, with the idea of a Deathbringer, maybe he already knew this was going to happen. But this might maybe spur him along further to say, okay, these hosts, you know, without Dolores, who got some heavy tampering, I feel like, these other hosts have the capacity to sort of come into their own. Let me proceed with my plan.
Yeah, no, because I think there's even an element to Ford's conversation with him that kind of counters the thought that Ford is still the puppet master pulling the strings, where he's kind of curious about Aki because he's kind of been doing this on his own. Like, he instilled this sense of curiosity in them to kind of fill this, you know, blank canvas with mythology or whatever. And he is taking it in such an independent place where he wants to leave this world and find one where he's his own person and independent from, you know, them stealing our memories and kind of putting them underground and all that kind of stuff. So I think that's interesting as well. But it's a really cool callback to season one. And I think, you know, with the context of this episode, I think it fits in there perfectly.
And it's also a really nice bookend, even through this episode, where we see these extended montages of him walking through this, like, desiccated Escalante, where the first time it was due to the big Wyatt massacre slash Dolores killing Arnold. This time it's the big board member massacre slash Dolores killing Ford. And to see the interesting parallels between that, him sort of slowly processing through the town, how it's very similarly shot, and how, you know, last time it was him sort of opening a door, I feel like this time is him running through it, that he's officially following Ford's instructions. He says, as you said, now it's time to find the door before the Deathbringer ends us all. So now he's finally saying, okay, this is my mission. I need to move forward with it. So even, again, one of the fantastic things about this episode is even just within a self-contained structure, it's so well done. Westworld does a great job of connecting a bunch of different episodes to each other to make one larger macro narrative. But again, going back to the micro narrative, as a self-contained episode and a general arc for this new character, I feel like it's so well done.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And then out of that, we also have what I called Lee's Elliot E.T. moment, where an E.T. Elliot kind of apologizes as E.T.'s dying on the operating table. Lee apologizes for what's happened to her and tells her she belongs with her daughter. And when the tech gets there, he wants to use her for something else and boots Lee. Lee has a complete change of heart where I think just last episode, you know, he thinks that, you know, the daughter's programmed. Maeve is putting way too much stock into it. But in this, he is hook, line, and sinker in on Maeve's daughter and wants Maeve to get back to her daughter.
So, correct me if I'm wrong here, did the tech want to, like, strip Maeve for parts? That's what it sounded like to me.
I thought maybe trying to use her since she was able to get admin access to, like, get the park under control again, maybe.
Right. That's what I thought.
I guess that's what he tells Charlotte later, right? Which is like, hey, this host was able to, you know, bypass the firewall at all times and now has admin access. You know, we can utilize her, even though they don't know this. But with Ford assumingly now in Bernard's head, the firewall is down completely, so now they can still get back into the system if they want to. But also, the cradle got blew up.
Yeah, it got blown. We then go to Emily, who takes her father.
What happened here?
Emily
came in and saved her father.
Yeah.
Okay. Keep going.
Was that a theory that you had?
That was my theory.
But can't we call that a theory? I mean, it's just like kind of going where the plot would assume to go. Like.
Wait until the end of the episode. Look, I'm not the person that had to beg for
No, I just made my case. I feel like saying Emily will come back for her dad. That's a theory. Are we calling that a theory?
It's a theory that happened.
That's a prediction.
And it happened.
Yeah, it's a prediction. I think your prediction was correct. But I don't think it's a theory.
Now, is it because Emily's not afraid of Ghost Nation? She knows she could go in there without being hurt.
I think we know after her first run in with them, and they didn't hurt her.
Yeah,
then.
That's true. Remember, she was the one that was speaking Lakota to them. Yep. They got brought to the original one, and I think she's okay seeing him once again, knowing that she was, to your point, sort of pardoned last time. I'm intrigued by this talk about him having a sickness. Do you think that's literal, or do you think it's more so this idea of like his depravity and his, I think, you know, blackened soul?
Yeah, that's what I think it is. He's just evil in his eyes,
right? Because they remember all of the horrible things he's done to them. That's
where I'm going with it.
But it again talks about this idea of, I don't know, I guess, you know, Delos was literally sick and then he got placed in this body. So I know that, like, your friend of mine, Joe Garfine, sort of has this idea that she thinks that William is a host hybrid, that he's another one of these Delos examples of, you know, his brain ball in a host body. And maybe that's another reason for him. Maybe he actually does have a sickness, and maybe now the body is suffering from it. Again, this is a long shot, but...
Is that why he's not dying?
That's what she was thinking as well, is like, there's a reason why he's getting shot out and all these things are happening to him, but he's still living, and it's not just because he's you know, very resilient.
That could happen, but I'm going to hope it doesn't.
I agree, because I made that point before as well, that, like, I think, to the point that you made earlier on, Jay, I think that William is such an interesting character. I love seeing this human character who is as depraved as he is and has these weird motivations that I think we'll find out more about next week. To have him be a host, I feel like then we're starting to get into the territory of the show of, like, okay, everyone's a host. You know, anyone who's meaningful is a host in some sort of way, shape, or form. And I don't want that. I do want to see the interactions between hosts and humans.
It worked. You could do it once with the Arnold or Bernard Arnold kind of reveal. But I think it's one of those things where you can do it once. If you do it again, it's like, meh, everybody's a host. Everybody works for Dharma.
Which they did.
Aki says it's time for them to go and apologizes to Maeve for not protecting her. And we kind of go to Hale, the tech, and Maeve. Tech tells Hale what she's accomplished, and Hale knows that she is communicating to other hosts still. She's like, who the hell is she communicating to? And then we see that she is actually communicating with Aki, and Aki tells her to keep he will keep her daughter safe, and if she lives, find them. If she doesn't, die well. To which Maeve says her first lines in the episode, take my heart when you go. Episode closes out. Boom.
It's a beautiful line, but also, again, the ramifications of it. But I'll go back to the question that I asked at the very beginning of this podcast. When do we assume that Maeve took over? Was it just for that final speech, or is there a possibility that this entire story that Aki told, Maeve obviously knew of this story. That's why she says the important line. Do you think there's a chance that, like, she could have told the entire story through him this entire episode?
I don't think she told it. I think he knew or sensed that she was connected to him. And not only was he telling a story to Maeve's daughter, but he was telling it to Maeve as well. That's how I thought
he was telling the story, not really to Maeve's daughter, but to Maeve, because Maeve has such a strong connection with her daughter, and he knew it.
And also, you know, it seems like of the two, Maeve is the one that sort of needs to be schooled a bit more as to her misconceptions about Ghost Nation.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's how I saw it. But I think there's definitely arguments made to go.
It could go either way. But that was my impression, that he was telling the story through the daughter to Maeve.
How did you guys feel, by the way, about that? We sort of skipped over earlier, but, you know, Aki telling Maeve's daughter, hey, when I was going in there, it wasn't as bad as your mother imagined. I was just trying to say hi to you guys. Is that a case of, like, maybe he should have made a better approach, maybe a less sketchy approach into the house? Because he's still stalking past their window dressed up like he is.
Well, I guess if was he also trying to scalp them and put the maze on the top of their heads? I mean...
Well, he would have done it, right?
Yeah, he had, like, the knife in his hand. So it might have been one of those things where it's like, yeah, I was trying to help you. It's like, really, really, though? I don't really want my head scalp cut off.
But you know, this is before you gave me some water, so it was cool.
But, yeah. I think that's a fair call out. You know, maybe just get the paint. The same way he approached his lady friend. You know, wash the paint off. Then approach, you know, very slowly, and maybe that's a better way to do it.
Do we think, is this a wrap on Maeve's daughter, considering that no. Maeve via Aki has said, like, okay, TTYL, hopefully we'll find you again someday. I think
Maeve has to get there. Even Lee said it, you deserve to be their daughter. If Maeve lives, I think even more than we'll see Logan again. Where this absolutely isn't the send-off for Maeve's daughter. Even though I feel like they should give her a name. Maeve. She just still does not have an official name.
Logan kills Maeve's daughter.
Oh, my God.
Old man Logan rises up from the grave and stabs Maeve's daughter just as she tries to walk through the door. It's there a killer go. Ending for season two.
There you go.
Oh, man. All right. Well, that's what we thought about this episode. We got a lot of feedback to get into, so let's jump into that listener feedback.
Listener feedback.
All right. It's listener feedback time. Got a lot of emails, even a phone call to get into. We'll start here with the emails. This first one from our friend of the show, Elena. Hey, guys. This thought has been brewing for a few weeks, and I am so confused by the timeline that it may be impossible. But can Charlotte be Maeve's grown daughter? ?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Love y'all. Elena.
Wow. Okay, well, I guess we have to think this one out now. Can Charlotte be Maeve's grown daughter? Now, that just confuses the timelines even more.
Now, do daughters, do they grow, though?
It's been one of our questions. It's seemingly no, but
wow,
anything's possible.
Well, that goes back to then Charlotte would be a host. We've some of us have thought anyway. I'm going to say that's pretty cool, but no.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I think that Charlotte has a purely human connection to the host, which is why she treats them so cruelly as pure business commodities and IP. So I agree. I think it would be a cool way to sort of tie everything into this increasingly gnarled family tree. But I think from a logistics perspective, I don't know how much sense it makes, unfortunately.
I didn't say the title she gave this email, but it's pretty fun. Crackpot-a-do theory.
Nice. Crackpot-a-do. It's like a beautiful ballet.
This next email is titled Baby Teddy. Hey, folks. I'm the one that wrote in a couple weeks ago about the pregnancy theory. Not Ethan seems to not have the broadest of storytelling imaginations. I don't think the host can currently become pregnant. I think that in the past they could serve as artificial wombs, and that one of the side hustles of Delos was to have them be surrogates. Not while they're in the park, but lined up in a lab growing babies, potentially fully delivering the baby, as that triggers certain hormones we release in the newborn, which is why some doctors mimic the pressure on the head when they're in their C-section deliveries, and then becoming impregnated again for the next customer. What if this was happening in one of the secret lairs, just like the experiments on Eternal Life? What if the hosts being used for this purpose, like Maeve, woke up? What if those memories of birthing a child, maybe even nurturing the newborn after the birth for a bit, was such a powerful experience they couldn't fully wipe it from Maeve's memory? She became the madam 10 years ago, correct, a sort of mother role on its own, and she played a mother before that. Maybe they gave her those stories to quell her mothering instincts that they couldn't erase. I don't think the daughter seeks endlessly is her actual flesh and blood. She can't be, as she hasn't ever aged, but perhaps they made her to replace the actual baby Maeve carried for 9+ months and can't get over having torn from her arms, be given to some rich lady from the real world. Sincerely, Katrina. I like that's an interesting thing. I think it makes it a more plausible situation.
I like Katrina's idea that, like, it really does get my brain going as to, you know, what were Arnold and Ford doing with the host as like a side hustle to make money while they were, you know, applying to Delos for seed money? What were they using these robots to do in the meantime to try to earn some money?
Yeah. I mean, we kind of saw prostitution a little bit.
Dolores was playing the piano.
But yeah, I think there's, to me, like looking at for her, Katrina's theory here, I don't see why you can't say that they could be used as surrogates as well. If they're, you know, if they can, like, take the consciousness of a dead person and become a new person, I feel like being a surrogate for a baby should be easier if, like, all the parts and pieces are the same.
I agree. Well, I think it's a good theory.
Well, I'll sort of add, you know, corollary onto that. What if we talk about this idea that Aki's part of, like, the Alpha 2 generation? What if it's only something that's a quality that's inherent within the first, like, generation of hosts? Mm-hmm. Like, what if once they found out that, oh, we don't need to do that sort of, you know, womb, artificial womb thing, they phase it out? Plus, that means that they're able to sort of do more population control, which means there could be a pregnant Dolores.
Yep. Mm. It's true. Yep.
That poor child.
I think that's a given, that she's pregnant with Teddy's baby.
Will she name it Peter after her father?
Well, Teddy won't be around, right? So, yeah, she can name it whatever she wants.
Teddy 2. I like it. This next one is from our good friend, not Ethan. Dear Jay, Jack, and oh, wait, you're still podcasting?
Wow.
It's good to be with you all for another rendition of Who is the Real Ethan? Last week was rather depressing. Should I send 2 emails per episode just in case Prime Ethan doesn't write in? You have a backup in your cradle. Speaking of backups and cradles, I want to talk about Abernathy. It seems that we have come to the conclusion of his story. As season 2 progressed, what we know now is that some kind of digital key to decode the special human mapping project was downloaded to Abernathy, that he's essentially used as a giant USB stick. Y'all have raised some great points about the convenience of his plotting, including why they just didn't pull the data from his brain earlier or cover it to a less conspicuous medium. Regardless, it was in his brain corrupting him, and now Dolores has sliced him open and taken his cookie for what I assume is a bargaining chip or a giant FU to the humans. Here's my questions. Didn't Charlotte say that it wasn't a key to unlocking data, but instead a failsafe in case of extreme emergency? If that's so, why didn't she use it? or who out there wants it? And what exactly will this failsafe do? And doesn't that conflict with our other understanding of what the data in Abernathy is the key to unlocking? Second question. Thinking back on the early Season 1 episodes, I'm not sure that Season 2 Abernathy lines up. In Season 1, he starts wigging out over that whole issue involving the photo of the outside world. Remember all the speculation out there where the photo came from and why it was triggering him and Dolores. He went a bit schizo and started Dolores on her path of awakening. It seemed like this was the Charlie and Desmond drowning in a car moment. So how do we reconcile all of that in Season 2? You could say that Ford made Abernathy activate Dolores to begin his final story. But if that's true, then the photo is irrelevant. Why have the photo storyline? And if Abernathy himself isn't special, but only became special after becoming Charlotte's USB stick, then what does his Season 1 storyline have to do with anything? Eager to hear your many thoughts, your best friend, not Ethan. To me, I think you look at Logan, who's kind of a useless character, but he had an important thing in this episode.
Why do we have to keep bashing Logan? I don't get the Logan hate.
So Logan kind of served the Abernathy. I think just simple that thing, just setting on the path. I don't think it was intentional by Abernathy, but that's what he did. That's what he ended up doing.
Yeah, well, I think that, I mean, yeah, because I do see what Nathan's saying, that the role he's playing in Season 1 and the role he played at the end of Season 1 going into Season 2 seem a little different. That, I mean, I wonder, I feel like at the end of Season 1, like, I'm trying to remember if they purposely picked Abernathy to be the data mule, or if they just sort of happened to pick someone out of cold storage and it was him. If it was the latter, then it seems like it's entirely tangentially connected, and that, you know, who knows, maybe Dolores wouldn't even go for the data if it wasn't located within her father or anything like that. But I see your point, Jay, that he does seem like a catalyst in the first season, if anything, to sort of spur Dolores on her path. So he almost always was sort of a tool that was used for some larger purpose, though I love that comparison of him as the giant USB.
Yeah.
And what did you think about his first question about, you know, the difference between it being a key versus what Charlotte describes as a failsafe? Do you feel like they lie in opposition, like he's saying?
Possibly, because I the more and more I'm thinking about it, if it maybe the since they haven't been able to put them into human bodies yet, maybe there's just like a big, huge data center that kind of keeps the consciousnesses of all these dead people kind of in limbo until they can bring them back again. It's almost this like artificial heaven that they've created. Because I think Ford said it last episode that, you know, the human mind is the last analog device in a digital world. And if in my mind, if everything's backed up, you know, those are the actual consciousness of all the different guests that they kind of been hosting there. And, you know, maybe once they die, they have like trust funds set up to kind of keep paying the bills on their host storage.
Like being frozen.
Kinda. But it would actually work.
Yeah.
Well, I wonder if, I don't know, I feel like it might be, you can consider it the same thing because it's being used by different people for different things. Like for Charlotte, it's a failsafe of a failsafe because, like you said, it might be like the data backup for the hosts or the humans so that, hey, if they happen to go down or if this whole project goes down, you still have this as a backup. For Dolores, it might be the key of like, hey, we get all these humans on file. Once they destroy them or unlock something, it can lead them as hosts out into the real world. So I think that it could serve both purposes. It's just sort of in the eye of the beholder.
But is Charlotte waiting for, she's waiting for directions from the corporation, right? That's why she
hasn't. I don't know, because I feel like wasn't that like she sent stuff to Delos and they sent Coughlin and the people in. So I don't know if she's still waiting for instructions from them, because yeah. Like, wasn't that what the company sent Coughlin in? So I guess that was sort of their answer to it.
I guess. Okay.
Yep. I agree. Yeah. Not Ethan. Thank you for writing in every single week, unlike actual Ethan.
That's dedication.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, hashtag spoiler alert, there is an Ethan email this week.
Ooh.
This next email.
Well, la-di-da.
Titled Crazy Crackpot Theory. Hey guys, been listening to you guys for a while and love your podcast. I love the first season of Westworld, but this season's been a little touch and go for me. It feels like season one and two are two different shows. That sometimes the acting is great, but the storylines this season have a little too out there for me. I don't want to give up on the show, but I hope the conclusion is satisfying. I was rewatching the Lost series finale, and a great crackpot theory hit me. There are great parent-child relationships that are explored in Westworld. Delos and Abernathy, Maeve and her daughter, Logan and Emily, even Lawrence and his daughter. A question that has bugged me this season is, why would Ford go to the trouble of building a host that looks, talks, and acts like his best friend, and then they try to rebuild his conscience over and over again? I kind of get why Logan would do it for James Delos, but why would Ford? I'm sure you guys have a few theories, but after some thought, it hit me. I'm calling it now. Bernard slash Arnold was not Ford's partner. He was Ford's son. Why else would he build a robot that he would see and talk to every day? Someone he would have a small, quiet moments with. Someone he's been clearly guiding and protecting. It's his son. This is my Rose Bernard work for Dharma. I don't think it'll be revealed this season or next, but season four. Don't forget who called it first. JD from NJ.
I think that was me that called it, right?
Yeah, now you're taking credit for it. We'll remember 2 years from now.
We'll forget about this email.
Oh, not 2 years from now. We'll remember like 5 years from now. Exactly. Westworld season four premiere.
Fantastic theory.
Yeah, this is such an interesting one. I would love it. It's very much like a Vader-Luke moment. But I don't know. Maybe I'll go back on what I said before. Maybe we need a flashback to the Arnold Ford relationship, because that feels very loosey-goosey. I feel like in the first season we were used to what we were being told, which is like they were good friends and colleagues, and then they fell apart because Arnold had these other ideas. But once we found out that Ford sort of came around on those ideas, I feel like that sort of muddles things up. I would love, I don't know if we can do that much CGI work on Anthony Hopkins, but I would love a young Arnold Ford episode where they how they got together, how long their friendship stemmed from, when things fell apart, if they fell apart. It would be great if he was his son, because I feel like, you know, to his point, that speaks, JD's point, that speaks really well to the familial connections, which become a really big theme in season two. But I feel like I need to just know more about their relationship before I can make any assumptions as to what that relationship is.
Yep, exactly. But I, you know, to get it, also throw Jack a bone with some more flashbacks in a way. But if they did youngify Anthony Hopkins, that'd be a really expensive episode, because I hear that stuff is really, really pricey.
Yeah, they'll have to, they would just have to, I guess, cast like a young Anthony Hopkins, sort of like in the show, like the show Genius that they do on National Geographic. They like cast like a young Pablo Picasso and an old Pablo Picasso. So they probably need to do that with just like a young Ford and a young Arnold, and maybe have them like in their preppy school, a la, you know, a separate piece or something.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, great theory, JD from NJ. If you'll have to hold us accountable to it, because Jack will definitely try and steal it if it does.
I've already done it. I've already stole it.
This next email is Westworld 2.8. Hey, Jay, Jack, and Mike. This is my first time writing in for the podcast, but I am very active in the Facebook group. My name is Ethan. But that someone else is using that name and not Ethan is taken too, I suppose I'll have to go by other Ethan.
How many people in the world are named Ethan?
30% of them.
This could just be a world like with a room full of Bernards from last week. It should be like a room full of Ethans that are all saying, okay, you're going to write about this. I'll write about this one. They'll never suspect a thing. We'll just say that we're other Ethan.
In my opinion, this is one of the best episodes this season. It speaks to the strength of the show that it can have these episodes where barely any English is spoken and people are still transfixed. I want to talk about the trailer for next week's episode. It's been theorized before that the Man in Black could be a host. I, however, think that he is not a host yet, but he will be by the end of the next episode. I believe his daughter will put his consciousness in a host version of himself, and that is why we see him holding a gun to his own head. Being like the host is the worst punishment his daughter could think of him for him. Wow. That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it. Other Ethan. P.S. Started listening to a Rob Has a Podcast and heard a familiar voice. Has Mike Bloom accessed the Mesh Network of my podcast list? Will he next be featured on my Philadelphia Eagles podcast?
Sure. No. I was an Eagle fans back in the day, like the mid-2000s, when Donovan McNabb was still a thing and not chilling out Chunky Sue. But no, I have infiltrated some of the Mesh Network of podcasting, but I still have a long way to go, other Ethan.
So you decided to jump off the bandwagon when they won.
Yeah, exactly. I wanted to take the true hipster route of, like, I liked the Eagles before they were cool.
Or good. Other Ethan, I think a good theory. I think,
great theory out of the gate. I think it's a really, and it would be an interesting way to end things where she says, you know, Emily says that she is going to make, you know, she's going to make Bill suffer in a way that's much, much worse than like even Aki could possibly imagine. You'd have to wonder if it is sort of while with Delos, it might be a form of redemption and possible saving. For Bill, it could be a form of torture that, hey, this is the thing that you've sort of been toying with your entire life. Now you're one of them. Shoes on the other foot. I don't know if I would undo what we said before about like how much we love Bill as a human character, but I feel like it would be an interesting way to sort of have her get her revenge on him after all these things.
What if it is correct, turns him into a host, and his punishment is he has to keep reliving his wife, finding his wife dead over and over again?
What would that be, another like Lazarus room with just a dead body in there?
Yeah, it just keeps. I mean, it's like, you know, how the hosts have the same storyline. Maybe that's how his story goes.
I mean, if you're a Jack, you should go on to you should start writing for Black Mirror now.
I'm just saying that would be what would be the ultimate punishment for everything he's done bad, just reliving the worst moment of his life over and over.
Yeah, I mean, that'd be pretty horrible.
Anyway,
yeah, just I don't know. I mean, again, it might be anachronistic unless they have like bathtub world. I don't know if you could really put them in. What should be? They're really scraping the bottom of the barrel for ideas. If we get bathtub world,
look at the bathhouse world. You know,
I have Roman bathhouses.
There you go.
Oh man. All right, let's go to this next email here. Take my heart when you go. Wow, wow, wow! What an incredible episode once more. The reveal at the end made my eyes well up in anguish and excitement. I've been thinking about this episode since it aired, and one question I have for Jay is, did you manage to appreciate the episode for the masterpiece that it is, or were you too distracted by the hopes of your own theory being proven correct? I asked this because I was rooting for it going into the episode, but then Ray and Dietz's writing and McLaren's performance made me forget about everything that matters. Hope they manage to do the same for you. Keep up the good work, guys. Shannon from Israel.
So,
they're
saying that you were wrong.
I guess I don't have Shannon's vote. No, but maybe
good thing Shannon is not that level of patron that you said entitled her to.
Or
vote,
maybe
or
they
be a tie.
They can listen to my pitch that convinced Mike to flip the vote. That maybe I can flip Shannon's as well, but we'll see.
I mean, I feel like, yeah, I mean, it's interesting, I guess, going in again with your mind. I mean, we were talking about this before, not necessarily that Jay needs to be proven right, but this idea that we were expecting one thing and we were completely surprised by another. But yeah, I can't say enough about that last line, considering that even outside of the circumstances, you also say that this is Maeve saying goodbye to her daughter as well, someone that she has been spending basically an entire season at this point looking for, and finally finding and having her slip out of her hands. It's just, it's heartbreaking. And Tandy Newton, as always, just puts in a powerhouse performance. So it was a beautiful way, beautiful and very simple way to end the episode.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. All right, this next email is from Jamie. Okay, I've been waiting for what seems like forever for the Ghost Station backstory episode, and man, was it worth it. Love the narration. Incredibly satisfying having some timeline gaps filled and explained. The music was perfect, and every shot was absolutely beautiful. Kudos to Zahn McLaren for his superb performance. His facial expressions alone were so emotional and honest. Super impressed. The scene where Akicheta, the body of Koana, he says something about every emotionless body there had someone mourning a loss they could not remember. I honestly think that that may be the best metaphor for depression I've ever heard. This series really does have some great metaphors. If you're interested, there's a Native American story that was clearly used as inspiration for this episode called The Spirit Bride. You all should check it out. Anyway, I really thought this episode was top-notch. It's going to be pretty difficult to top it, in my opinion. Can't wait to get out of work so I can watch it again. Thanks, guys. Jamie. Yeah, I agree.
I agree. Excellent. I did see a few people on Reddit that didn't like it.
Really?
But overall, most people liked it. Somebody was trying to make a case that it was a waste of time. I go, waste of time? I'm not going to argue with this person.
All right.
I think so. It couldn't be just someone trolling, but I just was like,
no, I mean, I think, again, they might have already like made up their mind before they watched it and think it was going to be a certain way.
But I think we all thought that. And then it just became, it was amazing. I mean, it just was a great episode.
Yeah.
Well, plus, if you're also like looking to pick up immediately after the last episode to see, okay, what's Dolores doing? You know, where's the Man in Black going? It's a little bit of a stop down, but that being said, I feel like we needed a breather, especially after some of the fun, chintzy action stuff that was going on in the previous episode. I feel like we unloaded all the bullets in our gun. We needed a second to like reload and let the gun smoke a little bit, and I feel like this was the perfect way to do so.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Yep. Agreed as well. All right. We have our last email from Ethan.
Aren't we out of time?
What's up, guys? How's it going? Ethan here. Long time, first time. Know what I'm saying? That's a radio term old vets like me use. You see, it means I'm a long time listener of your podcast, but a first time participating. Great term, but it doesn't apply to me. Oh, well. Jay, digital or organic, it's a filthy habit. As your old friend Carmelo used to say, more roughage overall in your diet is what you need. So it's a digital thing. It's from Mike's Skype. So really, it's not Mike farting, but it's a digital, like, and it gets compressed.
All right, okay.
That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. But we'll have to wait for the hashtag Fartgate podcast that is dissecting this whole controversy
coming in the Westworld off season.
Yeah, exactly. I guess now is a good time as any to talk about Westworld. It was a great episode and one for me to really try to deduce from. I have asked some questions at the bottom of the feedback. Hopefully you haven't already talked about them, but let's face it, you did. I enjoyed the change of pace and the acting was great. Now, let's set the record straight for Spencer, Shandy, or anyone else who might be listening. I will not confirm or deny whether I am Ethan, not Ethan, Ethan Fisher, Ethan Rode, Ethan Hunt, Ethan Hawk, Ethan Supley, Ethan Embry, Ethan Rom, Ethan Cohen, whichever, but this Ethan, who coined the term Armistice, never once said he wasn't a fan of the Twin Dragons. I didn't come up with that one, but I like it. Logan is back, right? We are done with him, as our old friends Monty Python used to say, he's not dead, he's resting. Did you notice what words were spoken in English and Lakota at the end? It's time to go, I've always kept you safe and I always will, English. But I couldn't help you. I'm sorry, Lakota. We'll guard your daughter as your own if you stay alive. Find us or die. Well, Lakota, take my heart when you go, English. Clearly, he's talking to Maeve and her daughter, and the language is important here as to who he is talking to. But again, I'm sure this has been covered. Also, Ford says, and man, I love seeing him, a flower growing in the darkness. You know what else grows in the darkness? Rhymes with push brooms. You know, Jay, you know, Native American connection there, but did Arnold cultivate peyote for the host Native peoples?
Wow, I mean, I guess if we're talking about side gigs to get some money, I suppose. No, I don't know if Arnold's selling them to his own host. I don't know if he's making much of a profit there.
Oh, man. Anyway, I'm getting away from my points. If you could have Mike Bloom read the following part, that would be awesome, as he is Jewish and the youngest, if not, oh well. Well, actually, he doesn't have it because this is the last, so I'll read it. Hopefully, it's as good. Why is this episode different from all other episodes? In other episodes this season, has been action, action, action. This episode has had solid character development. What is the reason for it? This episode has more of that awful tech we met last week. This week he is back, and I hate him more and more every time I see him. I see a stupid face. Will he die soon? I hope so. I hate him. In most episodes, we laugh at the loser that is Lee Sizemore, but in this episode, we feel for him and wish that he would take on more heroic attributes. Why? And this episode was kind of what I would like about Westworld to be most of the time. Is it Sir Anthony Hopkins, Tony as I call him when we hang out, and him alone that we can success of this episode on? I don't know.
I do like.
I don't know why. Jewish I don't know why you had to read this, Mike Bloom. I don't know what.
Well,
he was
because
going for.
Why is this blank different from all other blanks? Is one of the four questions that's usually asked at the Passover Seder. So I think, if I'm assuming correctly, if I'm into Ethan's mesh network here, which is a little complicated given all the other Ethans that are around, that's sort of why I
Dave would be able to figure out what Ethan it is.
That's true. That's true. Ethan, P.S. I made two picks, but it's hard to beat my Mona Lisa from last week. This episode was especially hard, but thanks to Jack for the last minute Reddit Inspirato. You just can't manufacture Inspirato.
Glad I could help.
I just can't wait for someone to break into the Eagles Inspirato.
He must be talking about the picture I found on Reddit. There's a photo and it shows we see a camera person behind Maeve.
No, that's not it.
That's not it.
I will say he has two photos here. I think they're both a lot of fun.
Usually we can see it, but Jay didn't.
I didn't put it in the notes. I had to do all my notes on a phone, which was great. But he will post those on the Facebook group. Both fun photos. So we'll leave it on that. Facebook.com/group/Jay and Jack group.
I made
if you want to see those photos.
One of my profile pictures.
It did. All right. Those are all the emails. We also have some phone calls to get into, so let's go jump into those now. Here we go.
Hey, Jay, Jack, and Mike. It's Shandy calling in with some feedback about Westworld episode 7. You knew I would, Jay. The episode title is pronounced Les Écorchés, and écorcher as a verb means to flay. Sort of usually used with like écorcher vif, to flay alive. So of course, when I first saw the title of the episode, I first immediately thought of House Bolton, but luckily it was not as gross as anything that House Bolton would have cooked up. But we did have some peeling back of the layers, as Mike said, of people's skin, especially in their head, taking out brains and whatnot. So yeah, that's how you pronounce it. And no, Jay, I was not upset. I literally correct people's pronunciation all day, every day. So don't worry, I'm used to it. It's all good. All right, thanks. Love the show, guys. Bye.
Hi, Jay, Jack, and Mike. This is Michael Brewer calling from California. Calling about the most recent episode, this Ghost Nation episode of Westworld. Did not like it. I remember talking about White Man Walking from Leftovers. I actually think that was a better episode than this one, and I'll explain why. So I just think this episode was too slow, too plodding. It didn't really give us a lot of new information. You know, it's HBO. It's their Sunday night programming. It's only 10 episodes, and I feel like this was the filler episode. There were four things that I felt like were halfway or partway redeeming, and that was seeing Logan alive, even if it was in a flashback. That was kind of cool, interesting, you know, maybe he's still alive in the present timeline, we'll see. The heart-shaped box cover from Nirvana, that was really cool and really fit that scene. The combo with Ford at the end, that was decent, you know, somewhat interesting. And then the idea that Maeve is tapping into other hosts and manipulating them there in the Mesa, I thought that was pretty good. But just overall, I felt like we just rehashed old plot lines of like, you know, a host loves someone and wants to get to them, and it took so long to get there. And don't get me wrong, the cinematography was great. It was very artfully done, great costuming, really interesting to build that world and have this Ghost Nation, but I just felt like they could have achieved the same thing in about 20 minutes rather than an hour episode. So I'm liking this season overall. I think it's hard to see where it's going to go. I think compared to last season, there's a lot of mystery still in the air, but thank you for doing your podcast. That's all for me.
All right. Thank you for those calls. First, Shandy, I know you wouldn't be upset, but I live one of my rules in life is just try not to disappoint Shandy. I don't want Shandy mad at me. But
I was disappointed. I was upset. I knew it was mispronounced, but I was upset.
But thank you for the clarification and a description there. Very helpful. And then our last phone call didn't like the episode. So backing up some of those Reddit people that you found, Jack.
Well, you know, he he did. He said something that, you know, Maeve. They know Maeve is communicating with other hosts, right?
Yep.
And she's able. Why wouldn't you just eliminate Maeve right then and there? You're being attacked by hosts left and right. Why would you want?
I think if they want to figure out how to stop all of them, they need to figure it out.
I get it, but you got to survive too, right?
Right, but these are not the smartest people in the world, right? Remember, these are the people that are like, oh, well, hey, pretty lady, I'm going to follow you into this, you know, this big cradle and get seduced by you. Oh, you pulled the grenade pin out, you know?
But Charlotte's supposed to be a little smarter.
Mm-hmm.
Charlotte is also emotionally overwhelmed by the fact that her entire, you know, battalion has been taken out and she's been one-upped by these hosts. I feel like she wants to use whatever leverage she can get. I don't want to put myself too much in her head, but it could be a strategic possibility for her to say, okay, we have this weapon now on our side. She's right where we want her. She's pinned down. Her neck is gaping open. She's not going anywhere.
But she can communicate with them. She doesn't need to be able to move.
But it's something they can use, at least. It's something that they didn't have about 5 minutes ago. Michael's call was really interesting for a number of reasons. First, it sort of backs up, like you said, Jay, what we were talking about before, where I think if people were more into finding out more about mysteries and going more down the path, the momentum that the previous episode sort of built up, I could understand the frustration with it. I did find it interesting that he's like, I didn't like this episode, except for these four things and these other things that I thought were really nicely done. No shade on Michael. I think he totally has some good points brought up about how maybe this was a little bit more of a slow plotting nature. I personally thought I think we needed a break from maybe mushing our brains week after week on this stuff, especially to explore some beautiful character-based and emotion-based arcs inherent there within. But I just thought it was an interesting way to sort of to make an argument there.
Yeah. No, I think.
Well, he did make a good point. There's only 10 episodes. Do they need a filler episode? I didn't think it was a filler episode myself, but he thought it was a filler episode.
Well, the question is it a filler episode with like only 10 episodes, or is it more of a, hey, we've got this long thing planned out, we can afford to take some time to focus on these smaller things? Not everything needs to be ball to the wall action.
Yeah, I agree with that angle of it, Mike.
I agree.
He made
a better case than the person on Reddit did.
That. Well, that's good. That's good. All right. Well, as we close up the feedback, I do appreciate giving a dissenting opinion, because I think it's important that all ideas are represented in listener feedback form. So kudos for Michael for calling in for that.
And for Michael falling the sword like that, I think he should be the sword. Can I finish? I think he should be the one to decide if Jay deserves a tally.
That's it, Michael. You are the kingmaker. It is your decision.
I love it. I think Michael needs to call next week and say thumbs up or thumbs down on Jay's theory.
Well, I think that, you know, maybe to the point that was made before, he was not watching this episode with Jay's theory at the forefront of his mind. So maybe he is the most objective person to judge it.
There you go.
But no, I totally agree with what you said before. I think, I mean, I love dissenting opinions. There's plenty on this podcast that we've talked through. And so don't be ashamed to go out, say we're wrong, and give your sort of arguments. Because again, I do feel like there are some people who, it's interesting, almost have the opposite opinions of Michael, that they feel like they're not really into season two. They feel like there are too many mysteries, not grounded enough, or, you know, maybe even too quickly moving. So to have so many different opinions on this show, I think makes for such fun discussion overall.
Yeah, we're not robots. I agree. If you guys want to call up and disagree with Mike and Jay, I have no problem with that.
Well, let's give him some opportunities to disagree with Jack next week. I think it's time to get into Jack's crackpot theory of the week. Jack, what do you have for us?
It's becoming like automatic.
What soap opera trope can I pick out this week?
I need to have like a filler crackpot theory, just, you know, where it just I have a throwaway.
Or we just change to Jack's crackpot prediction of the week, since I'm in really a theory.
No.
I think next week that there will be a flashback.
I think next week I'll have to beg for people, please vote for me that my theory was correct.
My theory is that Emily doesn't like her dad in the next episode.
All right, this is what's going to happen. Well, she doesn't like her dad.
Oh, prediction came true.
On a roll.
Winning.
No. What's going to happen next week? I'm telling you, this is what's going to happen. It's not a theory. It is a prediction.
Okay. All right.
So you can change it. I don't care.
No, it's fine.
I don't care what you call it.
No, go ahead.
That Lee Sizemore gets Felix, Sylvester, and Stubbs together. They rescue Maeve, but they also kill that tech and they kill Charlotte. Boom. They're both dead.
Okay. So you're expecting like an uprising from the renegade staff who decide to kill Charlotte.
That Lee realizes that he wants to save. And of course, Charlotte being Charlotte's not going to let it happen. And we know how Lee was, he was afraid of her season one, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to kill her. And the tech has to go too. Cause no one
We don't even know his name. That's how much we don't like
it was
him.
One of the Ethans said how much they didn't like him. And I agree. I can't stand him. So he needs to die too.
These poor techs are like the red shirts of Westworld. Like, with the exception of Felix and Sylvester, every time we get one, they end up getting killed off somehow.
Yes, yeah, true.
Well, I just think it's time for Charlotte to die. I mean, what's her point? I mean, she needs to die. She dies, and so does the tech.
Would it be better if Charlotte's brain gets put in young Logan's body? Is that the best of all possible worlds for you?
Why corrupt Logan?
Oh man, my prediction.
That's my prediction, and I'm sticking to it.
My theory is that Charlotte Hale is going to be a jerk next week. See, I was right. I was right.
Who knows? We might not even see her next week.
That's
who true. Knows?
You're going to see her. She's going to be a puddle of blood.
Yeah, with that eyeball in the corner, Charlotte Hale, confirmed on Reddit. No, I mean, it seems like next week. Not to spoil too much, but it seems like it's going to be very William-centric. Now, I know that we said that last week, and it turned out there was more stuff in the Mesa than we initially thought, but, I mean, who knows? We might not do a Charlotte check-in. It might be saving some of the finale. I can't believe there's only two episodes left.
I know.
How the heck are they going to finish off this season? Will they try to finish off the season on a bigger note? Because I think we actually talked about this at the end of season one, of, like, they have so much plotted out. Do they need to end on a big event? Because they know they're coming back, but knowing Westworld, I'm sure they'll do something while raising simultaneously more questions at the same time.
They have to have something where it keeps people. I mean, if they're going to wait another year and a half, I mean, how long was it last time?
It was a year and a half. Yeah.
If you're going to wait that long, you have to keep something for people to talk about for a while.
When I saw the trailer, I was like, oh, is there going to be 11 episodes this season? Because I was just like, I'm excited for, you know, getting more William story here. But I was almost just like, I don't think there's enough time. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see how it plays out.
And I wonder if, I haven't checked yet. I wonder if Westworld season two finale, much like the season one finale, is an hour and a half. Because let's remember that season one finale was buck wild with all the stuff that happened in that episode. So you'd have to assume that they might want to find another bangarang way to close everything up. Probably it will probably be the showdown at the Valley Beyond. This is how we find out how everything got drowned, how Teddy and a bunch of other hosts end up in there, what happened to Dolores, what happened to Bernard to make him forget everything, etc. That's my prediction for episode 10.
So
we'll see if it comes true.
So we have no idea when they're coming back.
We just know
there's gonna be a third season, but we don't know when
exactly.
Yeah, we know they are coming back. It's just a matter of when it happens. I don't know if production has started yet on the third season, so it might be a little while. I'm assuming it's not coming back until 2020, personally, because I think next year is going to be the final
Game of Thrones.
So I think HBO wants to sort of push aside marketing for that, since that's really their flagship, and then say, oh, yeah, you need more HBO prestige drama. May I reintroduce you to Westworld?
Well, they're having a spinoff or another game.
I don't know if the prequel's happening the next year,
but it is going to happen. So
yeah, maybe like, maybe
you can't bank everything on that. Look at Fear of the Walking Dead, right?
Yeah, sure. Fear of the Walking Dead. Okay,
that's what I'm saying. Like from HBO side, you know, it's Game of Thrones next year. Probably put it all into because it's not. Because it seemed like you were saying, well, they have the spinoff, so Game of Thrones isn't going anywhere, but you know, they probably want to.
I just think as you can't drag this out too long. Some of us aren't getting any younger. I mean, come on.
That's right. You're gonna die before Mike and I, probably.
No, we'll put his brain ball in like a in a lava lamp or something.
As long as it's facing the TV, I'm okay.
Oh man. All right, that will wrap up this episode of Westworld with J-Jack and Mike. Give us a call at 385-309-0311.
Call anytime.
And give us an email to westworldjjm@gmail.com. Join our Facebook group at facebook.com/group/JandJackGroup, where we discuss Westworld and much, much more. And if you'd like to become a patron, do so by going to patreon.com/JandJack. All of the podcasts on the Jay and Jack Network are listener supported, and the different levels in which you can contribute gets you different cool things, especially the level where you can vote on if I get a point for my theory or not. That's a new special level. And if you use Amazon, use the link jayandjack.com/Amazon. Anything sold through that will send a small percentage to the Jay and Jack production fold. If you like what we do, give us a review. A 5-star review on iTunes will help out the show tremendously. Go to jayandjack.com/iTunes for all the different podcasts on the Jay and Jack Network. We did have a review. It was a 4-star review where they said they didn't like that we used Bill in reference to William or Man in Black, and Bernie in reference to Bernard. I think we said Bill because it's the guy that got shot called him Bill, and it would make sense that, you know, as he got older, this different, he's not the young doughy-eyed William. And now that we know his name, should we still call him the Man in Black? And Bill kind of seemed to be the most appropriate.
I tell you what, make it a 5-star review and I'll apologize.
Well, I don't know how they're going to feel about them. I don't know how they feel about all the times we say Aki this episode.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a 2-star review.
That's will do it. Mike, you are a prolific podcaster. You have mesh networked into quite the plethora of different podcasts out there. But where can people find what you're doing right now?
You can find me at a Mike Bloom type on Twitter. As Jay said, I have been mentally communicating myself through all of these other podcasts, especially in the past week. If you are a Survivor fan, I did something that turned out to be very ridiculous, but at the same time, very fun, where Rob Cesternino and I got together and used a program to fully cast and simulate a Survivor season. And as it went along, we talked through what happened and sort of tried to fill in the blanks, much like Westworld, where you're presented with a bunch of questions that you essentially need to answer. Turned out to be one of the best podcasts I think we've done together. So it's 3 hours. It's a little lengthy, but you can always do it in segments. It's like 3 episodes of Westworld. It's no sweat. So be sure to check that out. And I've also been doing some stuff for Parade. Have some interviews coming up with some people from The Late Show, or from Late Night with Seth Meyers, as well as The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon. About some of the late night stuff going on over there at NBC. So always be sure to check that out at @AMikeBloomType on Twitter.
Awesome. And Jack, as always, you are on the Ramblecast. Anything that's special coming out in your world?
I cleaned my fish tank today. it was well overdue. They're happy.
We have our panel confirmed for Comic-Con. Our 12th annual Lost panel will be at the San Diego Comic-Con, and it should be a lot of fun. We have confirmed guest Joe Garfine from many great things like Cancer Gets Lost, as well as the Westworld post-show recap show. And we have Ralph Oppel from the Darmalars and the Kaiju podcast. Darmalars just recently released an episode, first time in like 10 years, on their feed. Ralph's a good friend of the show. I actually created the original Dharma iPod logo for the podcast 13
Any truth to the rumor they fired Ben right after the episode?
There might be more to come, so definitely check that out. But excited to have them joining our panel in San Diego this year. And I think that'll do it. We'll see you guys next time. Hasta luego, and goodbye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.